Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's February the 21st, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. And then we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bill Mayer at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. Dave Dickey will be along, too, to take a look at all the day's agricultural news. And then I'll bring you up to speed on IFPRI's thinking about food, fuel, and the environment. As you'll hear, the International Food Policy Research Institute would like freer trade, better distribution of technology, and a little social action, like a great big carbon sink market. And don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a complete look at today's agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Mark Report is a production of WILL, public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby March corn a penny higher today at $5.24.5. May contract at $5.37.5, up 1.5. And July futures at $5.49.5, up 2 cents on the afternoon. December corn futures up a nickel at $5.53. Soy complex now. March beans $14.05¾, up 8. May futures up 7¾ at $14.24¾. And July contract at $14.39.5, up 8¾. November soybeans at $13.78.5, 12.5 cents higher on the afternoon. Soybean meal futures at $3.59.30, up $1.10 for the day. And the May contract at $3.66.20, up 40 for the day. March bean oil at $61.31, up 63. The May futures up 65 at 62, or rather 62.12. And futures in Chicago for the wheat pit for the afternoon, $10.29.5, up 9.5 cents. May futures at $10.45.5, up 12. And July contract up 14.5 at 9.69. From the Mercantile Exchange, live cattle futures, February contract 91, 92.5, down 15. April futures at 94.50, down 45. And the March feeder cattle at 105, 7.5, 57.5 lower. The April futures are at 108.10, down 65 on the afternoon. April lean hog futures at $64 even, finished $1.07.5 lower today. May futures at $73.27, down 50 cents. Outside markets now from the crude oil futures. If we can take a look at those numbers, they are currently trading at $97.90, down $1.80 a barrel. And the May futures at $99.50, 24 higher on the afternoon. The U.S. dollar at 75.609, that's down 0.513. And the CRB index at 396.41 is 96 higher. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at last tick at 12,317. Just about 110 points higher on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the two-state region from our own Mike Sola. He says a winter weather advisory is in effect for portions of central Illinois and for much of central Indiana. That through this evening and right on through tomorrow evening as well. A winter storm warning in effect for portions of southwestern Illinois through tomorrow evening and southwestern Illinois until noon. An ice storm warning in effect for southern Illinois until midnight tonight and for the southwestern parts of Indiana until early tomorrow morning and for southeastern Indiana until mid-morning tomorrow. Tonight in the north-central parts of Illinois, Mike says, and in northern Indiana, snow showers. In the remainder of central Illinois and central Indiana, snow showers with some freezing rain possible. In the south, sleet, snow, freezing rain. Lows will range from about 5 degrees in northwestern Illinois to 32 in the far southern part of Illinois. Friday in the north, scattered snow showers, a few flurries. In central sections, an occasional snow, a little patchy freezing rain in the south, a mix of freezing rain tomorrow and some sleet with rain in the extreme south. The highs tomorrow will range from 20 in northwestern Illinois to near 40 in the southeastern parts of Indiana. The extended forecast has an active storm pattern. Will continue to bring occasional light, moderate precipitation to the area.
The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley at admworld.com.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, joins us this afternoon to take a look at what's been happening in the world of the agricultural markets. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Tell me if anything has changed in the last week about the way you view the marketplace and on
the
technical front.
Yeah, I'd say the corn market's having troubles at these levels. You can kind of see what happened. We broke into new highs for the move here in the overnight session, but then when we got USDA's estimates on acreage and supply demand balance sheets here this morning, then corn sold off its highs. We still closed higher. So, but corn is having problems right against this spike high that we had in the market here 2 weeks ago. So corn's kind of stalling out here. Soybeans still in a pretty good climb. We finally got the $14 number put on soybeans. So we did hit at least that milestone. Whether or not we could go any higher or not, that probably depends upon a lot of things. But I thought the market closed reasonably well, I guess, given USDA's crop estimates here today at their outlook concert, because they use the higher end type acreage numbers, at least a lot higher than what the trade's been looking at, and the market was still able to manage kind of an unchanged, slightly higher close.
Would you suspect, and I suppose you might have, that once corn tried to penetrate those spike highs or those highs from recent highs, that it would stall out for a while, and might it be able to go ahead and penetrate that?
I think there's still a good shot that we can see higher levels across the board, but we might be kind of in the window here for a breather. I think this month of February has been partly buying acreages simply because this is the month everybody uses for crop insurance prices and their guarantees. So this is actually a month of price action, I think, and you can kind of look, we've been basically up since February 1st. So I think, we're going to accomplish at least average price levels that farmers can at least protect themselves with insurance crop products. Now, the month of March, I think, could be more of a breather. It could be more of a second-guessing type situation, and maybe USDA's numbers here today might start some of that second-guessing that we may end up with larger acres than what we really think. But I would say that, the sharply higher numbers are probably, if we're going to ever attain those sharply higher numbers, it's probably going to have to come from a weather problem during the month of April or May.
And then if you look out into the summer months, can you foresee without any production problems being able to hold a $5 or close to a $5 corn price?
Well, a lot of that will depend upon our acres and our crop prospects. I guess, I think that March 31st report, I know each report, everybody keeps saying that's the most critical one. Maybe, each report's going to be critical from here on out. But that March 31st report is going to be real critical because it could do some revising downward of maybe feed usage from what was implied during the first quarter. That may end up giving us maybe a little larger carry out than what the market is looking at. And then, of course, acres may end up being a little bit on the high side. And if you have a good spring, I think you would have a normal seasonal type pattern where the market would then weaken, on into late summer, early fall. But I think, before we talk about downside price risk, I think we have to kind of get the top price kind of defined. And so far, that's what we're doing in here. I like I told Dave this morning, I think it's kind of, from a technical point of view, it's important that July corn futures make a new record high, and that would be to take out that 96 high of 554.5. I think that would be big from a technical perspective for us to maybe try to go on up to the next benchmark. But until we do that, the corn market is kind of stalling right in here.
What do you see for livestock producers at this point in the livestock side? I know you don't follow it as closely as you used to, but you must be keeping track of it to some extent.
Well, you have to simply because these current price levels of grain prices and meal prices and the end users, for the most part, none of them got any length in this market. It was always too high to buy. They had that mentality of a few years ago that you just buy hand to mouth. And, you know, during the late summer weakness and early fall weakness that we saw during harvest, they never really thought these prices, thought maybe prices would go lower later. So they don't have any length on. So they have to continue to buy these, price levels, by, you know, 30 days, 60 days at a time. So their profit margins are definitely being squeezed, or actually they're in the red for the most part. And I think that the indication by Smithfield here the other day that they were cutting back by 4% is telling you that there's been enough red ink being spilled in the pork complex that we're going to start seeing some cutbacks. And, of course, that cuts back on demand usage. I think that you have to kind of worry about that from being a corn farmer. But as far as a livestock farmer at this point, I think if he's been hand-to-mouth, he's pretty much got to stay the course at this point, at least until we kind of see, you know, what kind of spring weather pattern we're going to have and how the growing season starts out.
Are there many other numbers from the USDA that we ought to take up? I know that most in the trade were thinking the corn number would look like 88, but the USDA said, no, probably 90. That surprised the trade just a bit today. Anything else did you see?
Well, I think the bean number came in on the high side, too. I think I haven't seen the numbers. I'm down here in New Orleans with the Illinois Soybean Association on a marketing tour, and I haven't had a chance to look at the numbers. But I think Dave mentioned this morning that USDA found 6 million acres, additional acres, over a year ago. I would say that that is probably surprising. That's a pretty good increase from over a year ago. And I think there's probably some skepticism whether or not that's actually attainable or not.
A little bit more than actually. They came in at a 71 million acre, and I think a year ago we were at 63.7 wheat. They found 4 million acres there, too.
Right. And I think, like I told Dave, these are armchair guesses from particular economists. These are not surveyed numbers. You know, we're going to get our surveyed numbers at the end of March. You know, the survey is going to start taking place here the end of next week and the first part of the following week here, because they were supposed to be as of March 1. So once we get the surveyed numbers, then we can kind of go from there. But my guess is that with these current day prices, yes, we will probably plant more acres than what anybody really thinks at the end of the day. But I, you know, it may take till June to find out those numbers.
Dan, I appreciate you taking the time, and enjoy New Orleans.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Thursday afternoon. Don't forget to visit our website. The address is WILLAG.org. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment to take a complete look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural news.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In agricultural news, USDA Secretary Ed Schaefer is suggesting that agreement on the Farm Bill may not meet a March 15th deadline when the 2002 law is set to end. Schaefer predicts lawmakers will need to extend the current Farm Bill into April so negotiators and congressional staff can complete the bill. Phosphate fertilizer shortages are a real possibility this spring, according to industry experts. Since January of 2007, wholesale prices for fertilizer are up 30% for urea, 150% for potash, and over 200% for DAP. Fertilizer industry officials say urea could be 200,000 tons short across the U.S. for the 2008 growing season. USDA's latest 2008 trade surplus projection is $24.5 billion. That's $9 billion higher than USDA's December forecast. USDA Undersecretary Mark Keenum says the increase is due to foreign economic growth, including, in his words, explosive growth in China. USDA projects fiscal year 2008 exports at $101 billion, $10 billion more than its December estimate. Smithfield Foods says it plans to reduce the size of its hog herd by 4-5% because of high feed prices. Smithfield, the nation's largest hog producer, says it plans on cutting production by between 800,000 and 1 million hogs annually. A University of Missouri agricultural economist says hog producers in January, on average, lost $37 for each hog sold. That's the largest loss in 10 years. Analysts are questioning whether 40% of China's rapeseed crop has actually been damaged due to severe winter weather. Dan Bossi of Ag Resource in Chicago says his commercial sources in China say they don't see a significant loss to China's rapeseed. Bossi suggests China may be overstating its numbers in response to rising food prices. The nation's largest ethanol producer and Iowa State University are teaming up to find ways to squeeze more ethanol out of a kernel of corn. Poet LLC officials say the goal is to identify which lines of corn starches are more easily broken down into glucose by conversion enzymes. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is the Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL, Public Radio for the Farming World. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website. The address is WILLAG.org. You know, the world needs to get better at producing and distributing food. There is a plan of action out there that's supported by the Director General of the International Food Policy Research Institute. I'll have more from his recent visit to the U of I campus. Two of the world's primary needs have changed dramatically over the last 5 years, says the Director General of IFPRI.
We have a global supply constraint currently. The world does not produce enough food for the current high demand from consumers who have more purchasing power, who want to eat more and better, and at the same time we have this diversion into the energy sector out of the food sector, producing ethanol based on food. So that is met by a constraint on the production side. And that needs to be addressed by having simply a worldwide, much more productive agriculture that needs to be addressed in Illinois as much as in India.
Joachim von Braun leads IFPRI. The International Food Policy Research Institute's mission is to provide policy solutions that reduce poverty and end hunger and malnutrition around the globe. He argues there are three avenues to this end: technology transfer, free trade, and something he calls social action.
The prices are so high, we cannot fix it through the market and through technology only. The poorest of the poor must be addressed through new social policy action. A world scarce in food, that's my second suggestion, has to trade more, not less. So that's the trade policy, the gist of the trade policy recommendation. And most importantly, the first, really, we need a new global initiative for moving science and technology so that the constraints on the supply side are addressed. So a technology initiative.
A science and technology initiative that would set out to feed the world by transferring seed technology, scaling up fertilizer use, developing new and improved irrigation systems, and even setting up a global environmental system that might pay landowners in places like Brazil not to convert forest to farms. Carbon sequestration markets are already developing, and Von Braun predicts these will go global. And that, too, like the increasing individual demand for food and for energy, will strain the world's production capabilities. You might say that the food, fuel, and environment debate all ties back to the good things in life. Most people in the world have more money, and they are eating and living better. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
We've got a powerful lineup for our 2008 All-Day Agricultural Outlook meeting. Dan Bossi of Ag Resource will talk about the challenges ahead in agriculture's golden age, while Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises will explore 2008, a pivotal year for corn and soybeans. And we'll have sessions on ag weather, estate planning, crop insurance, and futures and basis for both corn and beans. Full details are on our website at WILLAG.org. The 2008 All-Day Ag Outlook meeting is made possible with support from Cargill, the Archer Daniels Midland Company, and the Andersons.
It's a Thursday afternoon, time to take a look at what's been happening in the world of the cash market. And Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington joins us this afternoon. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Todd.
It's cold out.
Farmers
deciding to stay in, or are they taking advantage of some frozen hard ground?
No, really not. A lot going on. It's been pretty quiet. Been pretty quiet as far as basis markets go, too, here the last week or so. Some improvement we've seen in the corn in some areas, mainly in the processing market. River bids really are a little bit weaker over the week, but just really not a lot of activity as far as, changes in basis anyhow. And soybeans kind of the same way, just kind of mixed pretty steady over the last week.
We know that elevators were having, and I don't want to exactly call it cash flow problems, but they were having margin call problems because the margin calls were so big and there was so much money on the line. Has that fixed itself at all yet, or is this still a recurring problem, you think, in the countryside?
Well, I think it's, I don't know if problem is the right word or not. I was over the grain feed on Monday at Peoria, and it was a topic of discussion, that's for sure. I think that's, as the elevators look out here to the future, they have to look at how to best manage their capital. I mean, they need to put money towards infrastructure improvement, towards additional storage in a lot of cases, and also, to finance or hedging program and how to, best distribute that capital to take advantage of and get all those jobs done is really what they're trying to achieve here. There's been some grain moved, and, that's brought some cash into the different companies. So I think it's probably less of a stress right now as it has been in, a month or so ago.
Your bids for the day are?
Cash corn, $4.98, new crop, $5.02, beans, $13.54, new crop, $13.28.
Bill, it's always a pleasure.
Thanks.
Thanks much. That's Bill Mayer. He's with Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the ag weather.
It's National Sticky Monday. Of course, a key ingredient is cinnamon, which originated in Sri Lanka. Marco Polo is credited with bringing cinnamon on a large scale to Europe. Modern sticky buns likely had their roots in medieval fritters. The sticky bun came to Philadelphia with 18th century English and German immigrants. On this day in agricultural history, in 1741, Jethro Tull died. He was an English agriculturalist and inventor whose ideas were instrumental in the development of modern English agriculture. One of his inventions was a horse-drawn seed planting drill that sowed three even rows of seed at once. The music group Jethro Tull was named for him. In 1858, Edwin T. Holmes sells the first electric burglar alarm in the U.S. in Boston, Massachusetts. His workshop was, by the way, used later by Alexander Graham Bell. In 1895, Carl Peter Henrik Dam was born. Dam was a British biochemist who discovered vitamin K in 1939. In 1985, Nathan Pritikin died. He was a nutritionist who believed that exercise and a low-fat, high unrefined carbohydrate diet helped reverse his own heart disease. He founded the Pritikin Longevity Center in 1976. In 1989, on this date, the USDA approved Simplese as a low-calorie fat substitute. In 1994, Whirlpool began manufacturing a refrigerator that was significantly more efficient and did not use Freon. Freon has been implicated in the destruction of ozone in the atmosphere. And that's this date in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is meteorologist Peter Levitt. Good afternoon to you, Peter.
Good afternoon, Todd.
We're in for, you know, every time I call and talk to you, I have to say we're in for another tough weekend, it appears. And I'm getting tired. I'm really getting kind of tired of it. But
one of the characteristics of weather is that there are cycles in weather on about a weekly, usually 6 day or 6 to 7 day cycle through the winter time, 7 day cycle in the summer, which is any golfer will tell you if he gets rained out early in the golf season on the weekend, he's in for a tough season because it seems to cycle that way. So, yeah, we're at it again here. Only this time I think we're going to get the snow and initial cold weather early on. It'll be tomorrow. And it'll probably be pretty well gone by Saturday. And then we're going to see a turn to colder weather this coming week. It's going to be a continuation of cold temperatures really through most of the week with most days below normal, averaging maybe 7 to 10 degrees below normal. So rather a cold period. The next storm system comes along about next Tuesday, and that one looks like it could produce several inches of snow. The stuff we're going to get tomorrow is probably only in the 1 to 3 inch range, but then we'll get this next system. But we're not going to see much respite from the cold weather. It's going to continue right through the end of next week.
And so we know how many clothes we'll need to wear, but we really probably should be concerned with what's been happening in other parts of the world where crops are growing. Tell me about South America.
Well, in South America, Brazil had a break in the weather. It had been too wet up north, too dry down south in the growing areas of southern Brazil, and that reversed this past week. We got some showers in southern Brazil, which is beneficial down there. Meanwhile, it dried out in the northern areas in time to get some of the early harvest going on the beans and stuff. So the weather pretty good in Brazil. The Argentines had favorable weather. They've had good moisture this season, and temperatures have not been excessively hot. Globally, the tough areas look to be China, and that's still sort of mysterious to us what kind of damage is being done by this exceptionally cold winter. And the very cold weather extends all the way west into the Middle Eastern states, where they're having agricultural problems in parts of Iran, Afghanistan, northern Iraq, those areas which normally don't see weather this cold. So all told, though, those are the tough areas. The rest of the southern hemisphere on the cool side for summertime, and it looks pretty good.
Will there be a way that we can divine what really happened in China eventually, or do we just not get enough information?
Well, we're not getting much information because it's an unusually far south snow cover, and we can't really see under the snow yet. But I think there are going to be significant livestock losses, and probably some of the wintering crops are going to show up as in real trouble in the Yangtze Valley area. And that area, it's really central and China that's been hit. Northern China, all the heavy weather has been south of there, but they've been very cold. But then it's wintertime, and they're used to the cold weather in the north.
Pete, thanks much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Pete Leavitt, meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Thursday afternoon. Thanks for being along for the ride today. Remember to visit our website. The address is willag.org. You have a good afternoon. Stay warm. I'm Todd Gleason.